The Army's requirement to defend the Philippines ensured that every War College class from 1920 to 1940 exercised War Plan Orange, the plan for war with Japan. As Williamson Murray has pointed out, successful peacetime military innovation often requires specificity. The need for advanced bases in War Plan Orange encouraged the Navy to develop carrier aviation and the Marine Corps to develop a doctrine for amphibious operations. It also required the Army to project, conduct, and sustain large-scale expeditionary operations. This forced the Army to consider the requirements for modern joint warfare, how to combine air, land, and sea forces across great distances. The solutions included joint staffs, unity of command, and leveraging air, sea, and land power in phased joint campaigns. These solutions developed at the War College remained in the curriculum, but did not find their way into approved doctrine. Without the actual pressures of war, the Navy and Army could never have agreed on developing a true joint doctrine that might infringe on service autonomy. Once faced with the reality of war, the bureaucratic inertia of the peacetime Army forces gave way to the lessons learned and exercised in the academic freedom of the senior service colleges. In all the discussions during the interwar years about how to fight and win the next war, the debate over the role of air power remained the most controversial. At Leavenworth and the War College, the Army insisted that air power should be harnessed to tactical and operational tasks. The Army Air Corps, sensing the new power and potential of aviation, advocated a strategic role for air power. America's faith in air power well suited its economic strength, love of technology, and the great distances over which the United States had to fight. General Hap Arnold, General Spotts, and General Eaker got their chance to demonstrate the strategic reach and impact of air power. The success of strategic bombing in World War II has been debated. The strategic bombing survey conducted after the war in Europe suggested it was decisive, but emphasized the resilient nature of the German economy and will. In the Pacific, the survey documented the decline of the Japanese economy, but noted the difficulty in determining the causes between the physical destruction and the impact of declining imports as a result of submarine interdiction of Japanese sea routes. The surrender of Japan following the dropping of the atomic bombs suggested the decisive nature of air power, but the survey asserted Japan would have surrendered by November 1945 regardless. Strategic air power, certainly in Europe, may have made its greatest contribution at the operational level. The deep raids into Germany challenged the Luftwaffe to a showdown, which resulted in an attritional struggle, the outcome of which was Allied air superiority over the battlefield. The impact of air power at the operational level during World War II drove planning. As anticipated during the interwar years, air power could successfully isolate the battlefield and provide distant operational fires to enhance friendly maneuver while restricting that by the enemy. In the Pacific, the need to extend Allied air power by either land-based or carrier aviation dictated the scheme of maneuver. In Europe, air supremacy made Operation Overlord possible by denying German reinforcements into the invasion area and allowing the Allies time to build up combat power in the beachhead, secure their foothold, and then move inland. Senior American commanders noted the importance of air power as one of the great lessons of World War II. Perhaps they learned that lesson too well.